The World Wrestling Federation. For over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment.
What's our name?
We're men! Yes. Men on the
mission! Are you ready?
We're men!
Here we go!
Men
on the mission! Bam, bang, boom! Here we go!
Welcome to the New Gen on a Mission podcast, the North-South Connection. I'm Tim Slotka.
I'm JP.
Thanks for joining us again. As always, we're on the journey to relive the new generation era, to find the best and some of the worst of wrestling time period often forgotten. From Brendan Shaw at Survivor Series 92 to Brendan Shaw at Survivor Series 97, look beyond just the pay-per-views, examine weekly TV and see what worked, what could have worked, and what failed. JP, how's it going?
I'm pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We're here for WrestleMania 9, so It's a big event. So,
oh, it's a banner show. This is a. Yeah. I don't care I don't care how much this show gets shit on. I'm here to defend it. I'm here to celebrate it. So that's what's gonna happen tonight.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's kind of. I was just thinking, it's kind of. You know, this one's big. We got. You know, I love the lead ups to it, but King of the Ring. You know, the first King of the Ring will be exciting. SummerSlam. Oh, yeah. I think Survivor Series might be the first one. 93, where I'm just. You know, it's kind of not a bit, but there's a lot. I think. For a while here, we got some big shows coming up. I don't know, they always don't all deliver, but like they're right. Definitely things that are pumped up and excitement. So
I'm not gonna act like I'm not trying to like overhype this show and make it sound like it's this great WrestleMania, but I definitely don't like this is the default answer for the worst WrestleMania of all time for a lot of people. And I don't think, you know, going back and watching it, I don't think it's anywhere near the worst.
Yeah, what would you say is your maybe bottom three? Would you say for Manias?
Like I don't even want to say two because they were in Chicago for part of it.
So and the fridge was there.
Won't let me,
and the fridge was there.
My bias won't let me do that. I did not like WrestleMania 2000. I didn't like it all.
Okay.
One of the WrestleManias 25. I didn't like outside of the Taker. And Shawn match. Yeah, and I don't know if it was 29. It was another recent one that was kind of bad that I didn't like. But those are ones that popped in my head. Like I even like WrestleMania 11, and that gets like, you know, crapped on all the time too. But it's just that era. Like I'll admit that's not like a great show, but yeah. The nostalgia. I have like this irrational love for 95, so I can't get past that one.
We'll get there and examine it in full length.
What about you? What do you think are some that you think should be at the bottom?
The worst to me, 32. It's just long. It's
maybe that's the one I'm thinking of. It's a newer one. Yeah.
Yeah, that one just rubs me the wrong way. I don't like two. I just think it doesn't. It's just so poorly put together, and it's like watching. You're like, what am I watching? Like it's just
right.
It just feels awkward. 29 is another one I don't really like. That's got like a 75-minute Brock Lesnar Triple H match. So, you know, I don't think I've ever rewatched that. I agree on 25, and then I would throw 9 in there. But I think right. I mean, it'll be interesting when we get to 11. But I would actually think I would throw, based upon this watching, 11 worse than 9. So those would be my bottom.
I'd probably put 11 under 9 too, because you know the Brett Backlund match pisses me off. Diesel right. Shawn's nowhere near as good as it could be.
The first match is garbage.
On there.
Yeah, like the first two matches is you got Allied Powers
LT
versus
Bigelow.
Well, that's a good, but yeah,
that's
big
a good
match.
Match.
Yeah, but yeah, the last two matches are kind of good, but everything else is kind of
right.
I mean, Razor and Jarrett, I think, do like a no contest or something. Something we'll get
right,
used to in this
right.
in this Mania. It's got a lot of similarities.
Exactly.
But and the first match is like Allied Powers versus Blue Brothers. Like there's just, you know, it's a lot of bland the first hour. Or so
right.
Yeah. Well, what would you say? Maybe top a couple. Your favorite WrestleMania, so we don't want to talk all the bad.
So
I feel like 17 and 19, but we'll see if you got
17 is not my one of my favorite, and it's so weird. And it's probably the best. Like I can objectively say it is the best. 19 was always my favorite, and 21 because I love that Angle and Shawn match, and I was like, I like that show for some reason with the first Money in the Bank.
Okay.
24 is probably my favorite because that was my first live Mania, and so that just like. And it happened to be a good show. Like even rewatching it, like I think that's an objectively good show. 24, but
yes,
growing up, like all my life, the default answer was 10. because of the Bret matches, like the, you know, both the Bret matches on the show and the ladder match. I thought like that just did it for me, but I don't think 10 is still there anymore. I think it's probably 19 or 24 for me. What about you? Oh, 30. 30's up there too.
Yeah, I was at 30, and I'm not the highest on 30. It's not bad, but I just I don't have that revere for it that like other people, you know, do. And I admit I'm not a big Daniel Bryan. It was an awesome moment to be there for Daniel to be there for Daniel Bryan, but actually like the actual like fan of him, I like wasn't pumped for it. I can't ever downgrade that experience. Like that was an all-time moment.
I've been a Daniel Bryan fan. Like he's probably top two or three favorite wrestler for me. So that's probably the difference in why it, you know, changed. Cause I've seen Daniel Bryan since like 2003, 2004, you know, he's always been one of my favorites. So like that story arc, it just like the Bret story arc, like the first match being so good, then the main event, you win the belt. Like it just hit me the same as 10 did. So, but I see what you mean. If you're not like connected to Daniel Bryan like that, it wouldn't be the same. So it, you know, it would take you out a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah, 17, 19. I do like 24. I would definitely throw that in the top five. And then, you know, I'd throw 10 up there as well. I was trying to find, I actually ranked them all.
Seven too. Seven's such a good show.
Yeah. Seven's a good, yeah. So, I mean, there's like 7 and 6, the nostalgia, the like, right. I could throw on, even, you know, I even love 4. It's bad in ring quality. And there's like a half hour where I just stop watching like the Rude. I mean, there's like, that might be one of the worst half hours of Mania history. Rude into Jake, into Warrior,
Hercules. Warrior
Hercules, and then I think Hogan Andre. Like, that's yes. Like some of the worst actual in-ring wrestling of all time, all in a row.
Maybe that will help me sleep at night. I should probably start watching that instead of taking melatonin every night.
Yeah, because I get so pumped for the beginning of it. It's like the Battle Royal, the Duggan match is good. Like, you're seeing all the stars, and then it just, like, dives off a cliff. So that's a great one to throw on. But, yeah, you know, I would, yeah, like I said, 17, 19, 10, 24. I actually really like 31. Even though it's one of the more bloated ones, I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. That Brock match is awesome with Roman.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, surprise is awesome. So, you know, I don't hate the newer ones. And even I was lucky enough to go to, what was it? 37 this year.
Yeah.
I forget what year. I forget what number.
It was WrestleMania Pirate to me. That's all
WrestleMania Pirate. Yeah, not the one with fans. I was looking up there. You know, I wouldn't say it's top five, but man, it was pretty good.
That's awesome.
It's a little weird for two nights, but it was quite the show. All right, should we get moving along?
But before we get started, real quick, I just want to kind of like dedicate this show to our buddy Calvin, who just passed away.
Yeah,
member of, you know, North South, Place to Be. You know, I'm not going to act like I was, you know, really close to him or anything like that, but, you know, any like member of our little group here, it means something to me. So, just wanted to kind of dedicate the show to him and, you know, anybody that was close to him that might be listening. So just a shout out to him.
Yeah. I know I was, you know, a lot closer to, you know, Jennifer and others within the North South connection than me, but I was in one chat, you know, a couple chats with him, and you know, I just talked to him like 2 or 3 weeks ago because we were talking about wrestling figures. Like, oh, Slomka, I remember your wrestling figure fan. It was like, oh, how do you remember that? Like, it was just, he's definitely a kind person, definitely like cared about the people in the group. So, you know, sad to kind of hear, and you know, but it was a big wrestling fan, and so I know he would have, you know, loved being on some of the podcasts and listening to them. So, you know, tough to hear the news on Saturday.
Exactly.
So appreciate you saying something to kind of start us off.
Hey, no problem, man.
All right. So now we're ready for WrestleMania. So, Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's so weird because it's just a different looking Caesar's Palace than you're kind of used to. It's kind of in the parking lot of the back. You can see the power lines in the entrance, but it was Sunday, March 4th. Interesting time. It was like mid afternoon, you know, Vegas time. But by the end, it kind of gets dark. So they kind of, you know, to the best of their ability as far as you know, keeping the sun out of the eyes of everyone. They mm-hmm. kind of an awesome setup as far as kind of making it like a Roman Coliseum that definitely doesn't look like it's not an arena that's there all the time.
Right.
So definitely did a good job of carpeting it up.
Well, that's what stands out so much. So like, you know, we've talked about this multiple times, even just like messaging. We're not like, we don't rate shows or things just on match quality alone. So like this plays a part in why I think it's not one of the worst WrestleManias because
right.
of the aesthetic. Like, you know, a guy we're going to introduce here in a few minutes complained about wearing the togas and everything. I think that added to it. Like, I think it was just a theme that, you know, it's so memorable because of that. You're not going to forget. Like, if you talk about WrestleMania 9, you think, oh, togas, camels, Caesar's Palace, like all that stuff is as corny as it might be. At least it sticks with you, you know?
It adds to it. I think definitely.
Yeah.
It's no doubt about it. That it adds to the atmosphere. I think mm-hmm. everyone's big into it too. I think it's kind of easy to, you know, kind of crap on it and not do it. There's really no one not taking it not seriously, but no one's kind of mocking it, which I think adds to
right.
it. Once you start, get people started mocking, I think that kind of ruins it. But
right,
I think that all adds to it. So we kick off with some new entrance music, right? So it's kind of a weird. And not the standard WrestleMania music. You get Vince McMahon screaming WrestleMania, but then he introduces Gorilla Monsoon, who then yep. introduces Jim Ross. So kind of interesting. They kind of used, you know, Vince to narrate it and then Gorilla Monsoon pretty much to say, here's my replacement.
Right. Right.
I don't know if you had anything else to kind of add.
I thought yeah, the only thing I first when Vince did the intro, like, gave me chills. It felt so like nostalgic, him doing
yep.
the pay-per-view open like that. And I just love that. You know, I wish he would do that for most shows. But I thought Jim Ross, like, it didn't even feel like he was new there. Like, I don't know if it's because, you know, he's such a fixture into the WWF that you know him already. It just felt like he's been there for a few years already. Like, he fit perfect in with the show. He didn't seem nervous at all. He's like such a pro that, you know, he handled it in stride. And in his mind, he's probably like, you know, what the fuck am I doing out here? Like, I didn't
right.
sign up for this shit. Like, I want to call, you know, a 25-minute armbar with Barry Windham and shit. But he's, you know, he's out here looking at camels and all kinds of shit and guys with furry outfits on and all that. But he sold it, man. I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah, I had no complaints about, you know, him. He knew everything too. Like, there was not much where he was like lost mm-hmm. in the storyline either. Yeah, obviously this is, I think, his first event. I don't think he had done any trial runs that I could see. So I mean, he was ready to go for this. So obviously he came from WCW, had a falling out, and Vince jumped on him, probably seeing Gorilla was getting to his end.
Right.
And I don't know if Vince was ready to take over, but you know, this was supposed to be the guy for the next, you know, for the next, you know, 10, 15 years. And it kind of took a couple years before it jumped off. But, you know, he at least does right. I think he does the first two pay-per-views, King of Ring 2. Right. And then yes. he kind of disappeared. He's not around for a while, but, you know, obviously a staple of the Attitude Era, and still today, you know, around wrestling. So,
right.
And then we get, oh, go ahead. You can go ahead. Watch you.
So I was going to say next. So after we, you know, talk to the announcers and Savage isn't wearing a toga. He's about to come out next, but we get Caesar and Cleopatra come out. This was kind of stupid to me. I'm not going to lie. Like, I get it. I get why they're doing it, but like, you know, they could have, I don't know, shown them in the audience or shown them backstage or something instead of doing this whole like drawn out kind of thing. Like,
yep.
it's not real. Like, it's not really them. So, but they're kind of like, I was impressed how Cleopatra was like sitting in the elephant's trunk, how she was like sitting in that. It was yep. kind of weird, but yeah. Did you have anything to add about those two?
No, the only thing I'd say, it just adds to like the spectacle of it. So why it was kind of ridiculous, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of that thing, it did add to the spectacle of it. And I think it adds that, you know, Macho and Bobby coming out, I think it just adds to the kind of opening ceremony feel of it. So,
Yeah, that's true. Like when you think about like, you know, big, I don't know, bowl games and in college football or hockey, even whatever, like there is a, like an opening ceremony feel. So that
right.
that does make sense in that aspect of it. And, you know, it was kind of funny, like the, when they're coming out of elephants, like JR has already given us like elephant facts and stuff like that. Like he's given us backgrounds on elephants and everything. I was surprised he didn't say they went to like Southern Methodist and lettered their second year or something like that. But he after the Cleopatra and Caesar come out, we get Savage finally, and he gets a pretty good ovation. Then we get Heenan coming out backwards on a camel, which is like the iconic, you know, everybody kind of looks back at that. He's just so like flustered coming out of the camel. He looks scared. He's probably legitimately scared to death to be on that camel because it involved his neck,
yeah.
and neck problems and everything. So I think there's a little bit of realism to that, and you could tell.
Yep.
But yeah, overall as a package, I do think this was a good way to start the show off and kind of get you invested in the atmosphere.
Yeah, I think, you know, they do the spot where Heenan's like flustered and falling over, and they pull up his toga to show some big, giant blue underwear size, you know, quadruple X. Kind of, you know, making a comedy thing. And of course, Macho's with the Vestal Virgins, and he brings it up about 50 times during the pay per view about the Vestal Virgins. So, classic Macho. God. So you know, from that, it kind of sets the atmosphere, and we're into our first match. Oh, we forgot the I don't know if you watched or could I've watched it before, but I couldn't find it now. But the opening match or the dark match, did you see? Happen to see what it was?
No, I didn't know what it was. What was
it? Yeah, there's a Papa Shango Tito Santana.
Oh so shit! I wanted to see that.
It used to be they released as a hidden gem, like on the network, but they haven't moved it over. I'm sure there's a. Quite the log of people complaining about it. So then I couldn't find it. So to watch,
right.
I was going to send it to you, but I couldn't find, you know, a YouTube clip or anything of it. So I'm sure it was, nice. You know, 7 stars, but.
Well, it warms my heart to know Papa Shango was at WrestleMania. So that just makes it feel better.
Yeah. It was interesting to make that a dark match because Tito had been at every Mania. So this, right. you know, him and Hogan. So it was weird. They didn't like throw it on here. You know, even to bring it up, you know, but obviously gave him the opening match, but kind of a weird dark match.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I just say on Ross, like too, why he's waiting for everyone to come up. He's really building it up as a big event. So he talks through how there's a double main event and he just I feel like he just knows his stuff. Like he comes in pretty crystal clear, like really he's, you know, he's got the JR thing of just like way too many facts real quick, but it's good. Right. It gives it like, hey, yes. this guy came prepared. So we get our opening match, which is Shawn Tatanka, which I have in the background right now watching. So for the Intercontinental Championship, we thought this match has been built up real build. They've built Tatanka, who's well over as a credible star, right? He won and he beat him in a non-title match. He beat him in the six-man with the Nasty Boys and Beverly Brothers. So it's quite an awesome match. I remember when I first got this VHS, I watched this match only and went to my brother's baseball game. And I was like, I can't believe they opened with an Intercontinental title match. Like, I remember how excited, like how big of a deal with this was. Cause these were always the matches kind of in the middle, right? So it's kind of big to come out with like, oh man, a title match to start. So it gives the show like this big start, like, oh man, they're not messing around. And the only thing I'd say is we get added into it. We get Sherry for some reason out with Tatanka. And we get Sean's new mistress, Luna Vachon, quite the interesting character.
God, yeah.
And just a weird offset with her. Like, Sherry kind of was weird, right? A little older, but they had always presented her as, you know, her tits out and everything.
Right.
But Luna is a character that just doesn't fit with Sean at all.
Not at all.
Right.
Thank you.
And I don't know if he pays attention to her at all. But it's a weird pairing. This might be their only time together. And it kind of takes away from the match as far as I think they were trying to put Tatanka over and this, now you got this other stuff happening. The only thing I'd say the match is a little long, but it's good, right? It's a good opener, but just a little long, 17 minutes. And it ends in a poor DQ or maybe it's a count out. I couldn't even remember, but
they call it a count out, but the actions look like a DQ.
Yeah.
like and the problem with it was so delayed. Like it was, it wasn't just a hey, like you're out of the ring. Oh, you counted out. So there's like some suspense to it. It was they're both in the ring. They're kind of getting ready to set something else up, and they call a DQ. It was almost like or a count out. It was almost like the ref. I don't know if they had like the earpieces yet or if
right,
the
manager
told them. It was almost like someone told them, "Hey, wrap this up." Like maybe they went long because the match did go. Like I thought the match was pretty solid. They had some like you know cool spots where like Sean dived off the top rope and Tatanka caught him in an arm drag. Like
right, as he's oh, diving that was awesome. Yep.
Yeah, I've never seen that. I still have never seen that.
Yeah.
But that the match was good. It was solid. It wasn't like neck pace or anything like that. But yeah, the finish just kind of like came out of nowhere and I just shit all over the match. And back to what you're saying about Luna, she does not fit with Sean at all. Like Sherry, you can get the whole like MILF thing or whatever. Like
right, that's
why Sean's into her. But Luna, like,
and they don't make her seem like she's old. Yeah, like right. Sherry, they never treat as like I don't think she's that old. Like they kind of
right,
like she kind of is old, but like
yeah,
they don't make her like old.
Right. But you would never believe Sean would be with a girl like Luna. Like
right.
It just it's so, you know, non-believable. And she doesn't like I don't know why they're throwing so much stuff at Sean. Just let him be his heel character. Like
yep.
He doesn't need all these accessories. It's like, you know, when putting a manager with CM Punk or something like that. Like you don't need to do all that extra stuff. But yeah, go ahead.
And even Tatanka doesn't need it either. Like he's got it over on himself. Like I know he's not a great mouthpiece, but like he doesn't need a manager either.
Yeah, and it's one little fun fact that I have both these elite figures, the Sean, the black and white, and Tatanka. I noticed it today. I'm like, oh, I have this match right here.
Okay.
So I like to collect the new generation era elite figures. But yeah, the match was cool. It's a nice little start. They kind of booked themselves into a corner where they didn't want to like beat Tatanka, and they weren't ready for Sean to lose the belt.
Right. Yep.
The Luna thing's just weird, but you know, it's a solid little match. Nothing too crazy.
Go ahead.
No, I was done with the match.
Yeah, I was gonna say the only thing it ends with, right, is Tatanka kind of celebrates with Sherry in the ring, even though he didn't win, and Luna pulls out Sherry and kind of knocks her out. So they're kind of setting up the Luna Sherry fights, and Tatanka goes chasing after her. So I know they give updates throughout the night. I don't think they show her, but they talk about how Sherry's really bad, like that Luna really took her out. So they're really setting up a Sherry Luna, which okay from the match. If you're not going to get a win and you set up a kind of women's feud that you know we're going to bring back women's wrestling in that, okay, I like that, right? That at least you did something with it, but it's just kind of silly. And I guess the only thing they maybe thought was, you know, besides keep it Sherry with Sean, was hey, we're going to have all this extra, you know, extracurricular activity so that. You know, Tatanka's loss doesn't feel as bad, right? Like him not winning the title feels like, oh, there was so much other stuff happening. I'm guessing was their thought because they keep the undefeated streak for a while still. So like they definitely still want him to be undefeated. So good opening match. Like I said, it 17 minutes, maybe a little long for an opener. Yeah. I never liked the over 10 minute openers, but it never was really boring. So I like that.
Right. So from there, we're going to get the Steiners versus the Head Shrinkers, which might have made more sense to be the opener, in my opinion, because it was a little more compact. And like if you'd have known ahead of time the way they were going to work, like it probably would have been better because they were stiff as hell with each other. Like both these teams, like it was like meat slap. It was like Rocky going into the butcher and pounding the meat the way they're just slapping the hell out of each other. It was just crazy how stiff they were. And I think both teams agreed to it ahead of time. Like, look, you know, this is, you know, WrestleMania. Let's just go out there and beat the shit out of each other. But this is the match where they mentioned that Sherry was attacked by Luna backstage. And they're kind of building towards that, like you said. So they're making it, you know, a big deal that Luna's kind of crazy and you don't know where she's going to go. But this was a pretty fun match. It wasn't like a... you know, like a classic or anything. It wasn't even like something, you know, go out where you see. It's just solid. It's not offensive. There was a good hot tag to Rick where he just came in and started lighting people up, which I always like because I think he's like a great hot tag wrestler.
Yeah.
They do like the finish comes with like a Frankensteiner from Scott, but it's kind of loose. Like, he doesn't get them like he usually does.
I don't know what it is, yeah.
And it's like, I don't, like you do the head shrinker gimmick where you land them on their head and it never hurts them, and you punch their head and it never hurts them, but you do this loose-ass Frankenstein and all of a sudden it's
well, if
a,
you break
it's a
his
finisher.
Neck. Right, if you break right. his neck. So
right. I guess that's what you got to do. Yeah, it was just weird, and I think they caught, like, I don't know if it was JR, and one of them kind of, like, noticed it, but they kind of covered it up pretty well. That it was a little sloppy, but... Yeah,
because Heenan wants to see a replay.
Oh, replay!
Ross,
that's what it was.
Yeah, Ross is like, one. They didn't have what replays back then. So yeah. Heenan, for some reason, I think he was calling it out because it was so crappy.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to see a replay of that. I think he was kind of mocking it a little bit.
I think you're right. But that was awesome. That part was awesome that Bobby was doing. He was being a little dick, but
yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So what do you think of the match?
I mean, the match it goes on a little long for, you know, a team that no one cares about. The head shrinkers got like no. This is a weird crowd. You clearly,
yeah.
There's a part later in the night where I got to talk about a guy. But like, it's a weird crowd. They kind of love the entrances. They get cheers if the crowd does it. But like during the matches, they're kind of out of it. So like the head shrinkers come out, and I don't think anyone understands what they are. You got this casino crowd. It's like, what is this team? Because they don't really feel like evil, right? Besides just being foreign, right? So. The match goes on like kind of long as far as like no one really cares about the head shrinkers. And while the Steiners get a huge pop for coming out, the crowd doesn't care about their moves. Like they never get behind them because the Steiners aren't good about getting the crowd behind them, right? Like the Nasties really good job of that. Even Tatanka, right? Like gets the crowd up for it. Like there's other people that do a good job of getting the crowd. Like the Steiners, that's not there. They're, you know, good wrestlers.
Exactly.
So the crowd's kind of out of it, but man, there's three or four of the best moves in this match that I've never seen. One of them is the power slam. The head shrinkers have Scott or Rick up on their shoulders, and they're going to do like a flying crossbody, and he does a power slam from the top rope, or catching him off the top rope. It's one of the best moves I've ever seen. And that's a move I've never seen again either. I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but that was...
Yeah, awesome. So he used to do that in WCW.
Okay.
Scott Steiner did, and I don't know if he does it. I don't remember if he doesn't. To explain the other moves you liked, I want to see if you say it, because there's
another
move he does.
There's the other one where they catapult him over the top rope, and the one head shrinker pulls the rope down, and he goes flying over the top rope with
oh, yeah.
I think it's kind of a botch, but it looked like he died.
Right.
So that's I think they were supposed to like slingshot him over, and I think he's supposed to slingshot over, but I think they pulled the rope they were too far away. So that's a move I've never really seen, like just throwing the guy over the top rope through like a slingshot. So both those moves were just awesome moves. And even the Frankenstein, like he kind of botches a little bit, but like it looks awesome on a big guy. So,
well, have you ever seen the move that Scott used to do? He used to do it in like early WCW, where he would hold him. You know how Razor does his like fall away slam?
Yeah.
He would hold him like that and do a moonsault and land on top of him, like while holding him the whole time.
Okay, I haven't seen that. Yeah,
you definitely have to. Anyone listening, if you haven't seen that move, and this is like 1988. He's doing shit like this. You have to see that. Like he was, I don't know if he messed up Sid. He hurt somebody with a move, but he was like literally jacking dudes up and flipping while holding them. And it's just like, holy shit, Scott Steiner's a fucking beast.
Yeah, he definitely is. Yeah. So like that's, I love this match for that. You know, of just like the kick ass, and it's a cool match for five or six moves. And besides that, I think it's good. You know, it's a tag opener. So I think 2 for 2, you know, if you say like a bad WrestleMania, there's nothing great in so far, but like, I think both, you know, kind of like close to 3-star matches, you know,
nothing offensive.
Right. And the first match kind of is a, you know, if it came up with Tatanka winning, I'd be a lot more happy. I think he kind of deserved it at this point. I think they put him over enough. But I think so far the Mania is going pretty decently.
Yes, sir.
So next we get to a recap of Doink and Crush. So Doink, there's a little Caesar statue, and he paints it with the green hair to celebrate, to decorate. And Mean Gene is floored by it. Cannot believe that Doink could do this. He's so upset.
Right.
So we get Doink the Clown versus Crush. So I like this match as far as the crowd. doesn't really care for Crush. So I think this is one where like they don't know who he is. So he comes up to a pop, and then it's most of the time it's silence. But he really, I thought he was really aggressive towards Doink, like really push him around. He throws him in the post. He's slapping him around. He's really beating him. So he's really making a blood feud. Just the crowd's not getting behind Crush. And then during the matches, Doink kind of take over a little bit. There's definitely a couple cheering sections for Doink. So everything he does gets a big round of applause, probably from some drunk Vegas idiots.
Right.
But there definitely was a big cheering section for Doink compared to Crush. So that's a great thing. I thought actually Macho, so he's in the commentary booth, you know, one, he's yelling, do the thing. But I like that he talks during the match. He must have known about it, but he goes how, you know, Crush feels like he's fighting multiple people out there. He mentions double vision. So Macho kind of does a good job setting up the ending.
Yeah.
So I think like that's a really good job of being the color guy and throwing subtle hints at what's going to happen. And so the ending of the match is the ref gets knocked down. Crush goes for the head vice and gets it on there. And then a second, the original double Doink before our,
I noticed that she
did the Parkey
before Park down goes, PTSD. Fuck Cody Parkey. I hope he listens to this and I will go find that motherfucker in Tennessee and that's that. But yeah, I thought I wrote the same. I was hoping you would catch it too.
Yeah.
When he said double Doink. I was like, oh, God, yep, trigger.
To do it. So, he comes out and takes out the arm again, and they whack Crush over the head, beat him down, and get the 1-2-3. Doink, you know, celebrates in the ring again. He gets some cheers again from the drunken Vegas crowd, and I think Bobby. This is the over top selling, but this is the kind that I like, where he's just so. Oh, what an illusion! David Copperfield's gonna you know, cancel your show at Caesar's Palace. Like, I think he's just so over the top and so kayfabe-y that it's good compared to like when he gets to the NWO, where it's just like, okay, it's no longer the kayfabe era.
Right. Yeah. So this match, I thought it was a little disappointing until the end. I thought the end was great. Like this is a little different, like the opposite of the Shawn Tatanka match, where the match was pretty good, then the finish kind of sucked towards the end.
Yeah.
This match kind of took a while, and a lot of it has to do with what you said about Crush, not the crowd not really being into him. Like I feel like if the crowd was behind him, you know, he'd feed off that energy and the match would be a little bit better. But the finish was awesome. Like that's another like iconic moment from this WrestleMania. Like you always see like if you see a collage about WrestleMania 9 or something, you're always gonna see the two Doinks, you know,
right,
miming each other like they're looking in a mirror kind of thing. So I thought this, you know, put over Doink well. I love that he gets the win. Like it was a smart thing to do and screw Crush over. Like you know, keeps him strong because you got two Doinks there, and it keeps like the intrigue around the character too. It's like, okay, what is he going to pull out next? Like, you know, he's come out with short hair. He's come out, you know, as a heel, he's come out kind of acting almost like a baby face. Like
he's come out,
you know, wrestling strong technical style. He's come out brawling. He's come out with this now. So it's like, what is he going to do next? It keeps him like, he's such an interesting character and I love that. But yeah, the double Doink thing, like when he did that, I had to pause the match. I was so pissed. When they said that, I forgot they called it a double Doink, but
yeah.
Solid match though. Nothing crazy, but I thought it told a great story and with the build and everything. This is kind of what you want. Like you don't want it to be some great blow off match, you know?
Yeah, and that was it. Like the crowd, like maybe they needed video packages to show to get it, people behind Crush, but like he's like throwing him to the ring post and like that should be a big spot and like it's right. Not like the crowd just silence and I think that just kind of kills from it. It's not too long, it's only 8 minutes, so like I like it. I think on the screwy finish, right, like okay, the one thing about this card is there's a ton of them, and so if like this was the only one, like this is a great finish, but when there's like so many of them, it starts getting to like okay, everything's so confusing. And obviously after the match, the refs go to check underneath the ring and there's no Doink under there. Did you ever find out who the other Doink is? Do you know who it is for this?
Is it Philip Hollow?
No, this time it's Skinner. So our boy Skinner is actually.
Oh, nice. Right. He was the first duplicate Doink.
Yeah. So it was kind of weird to see him around, you know, the road to March of WrestleMania. He was there. So, he's kind of maybe brought back for this role, but they probably, you know, are using him on house shows as well.
So I can say I've met Doink, so that's good.
You met Doink, yes. You met Doink the clown. Yeah. There you go.
It's a good little feather in my cap now.
Yeah,
it's good.
And so right after the match, they go. Tom Pettigo is in the crowd. Sure. These are amazing. His three or four appearances in the crowd. He goes to interview some photographers in a non-PC 1993. interview that somehow still on the network, but I cannot giggle at it because I feel like the guys are mocking him, so I hope they're going along with the joke, but it's so great.
I didn't realize how like goofy Todd Pettengill looks too. Like he just looks like as if like you know Goofy's son in the Goofy movie. He looks like that. Like he looks like a human version of that. Like he's like a
$2 glasses. Like
his mullet's terrible.
It's
like he just looks so weird. And he's the guy that like shits on wrestling and stuff. Like and thinks he's too cool for it. Like no, buddy, you're a little bit under wrestling. But the way they're, I swear, the one photographer was mocking him.
They were laughing. They were like,
"You idiot, get away from us."
Yeah, and it's also this crowd, so it's like the biggest crowd. So there's definitely a guy with no shirt on.
Right.
All the beers are like 50 ounces too. So like you see the crowd, like there's these just gigantic cups. So,
but you know what though, as goofy and stupid as this was, it does lay a little plot piece for King of the Ring.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I didn't think of that. Yeah.
With the Hogan point. And Yoko. So it's you know what I mean? Like it kind of like, okay, yeah, we have Japanese photographers.
This is a world event for him. Yeah.
Yoko's such a big deal. Like, you know, he draws these people in. So to me, that's kind of why they did it. Maybe not. But, you know, back then they booked so far in advance that I could see it. But
it's a great point. Yeah, it's definitely a touch. Yeah, and they definitely start building it up as Yoko is like this international champion. Because they haven't really done that yet. So they're really kind of adding it. Like this guy is, you know, only Americans hate him. The rest of the world, he's our champion. So I just had to bring that up because it was hilarious. I think I've watched it like 10 times because just one, just their interview and then just the crowd. Like there's just a guy screaming with no shirt on and just half the time. Like, had no idea who any of these wrestlers were or anything. He was just there to drink as many beers as he could. And he was having fun.
So speaking of needing to drink a couple beers, this next match. I don't know why this match is here. I don't understand the meaning of this match. I don't know, you know, what Razor did to deserve this, but it's Razor versus Bob Backlund. Razor comes out, and I love the black-on-black tights. He looks like a star when he comes out. Like, he's just soaking it up. He looks like he's the main event of this show. But then Bob Backlund, you know, he's such a little nerd, and the match is so, like, the match is so terrible, too. Like, Razor wins with a roll-up. Like, you can't even put his move over in WrestleMania. Like, I know Bob probably didn't want to take it. I know that's what it is because, you know, he's so old. But, like, it just – this match sucks so bad. There's no meaning for it. And it got me to thinking, like, you know, was it wrong for them to push Razor up the card as fast as they did and, like, knowing he's not going to get the title? Because now where do you go from there? Like –
yeah,
he lost the belt. Ever since he lost the belt, or didn't lose the belt, lost the title match at Rumble, he's been like fizzled out. Like, what do you do with him? You know, like,
right?
So you're putting him in a match with Bob Backlund at WrestleMania, which is terrible. Like, you should have just kept him off the card if it was going to be this. You know, it's like this almost does more damage to him than if he wasn't going to be on the card at all. So, I'm assuming you felt the same way about the match, but it sucked.
Yeah, so Fink does Razor moan in Spanish, so I love that. I don't think I've ever heard him do it before, but he adds the Spanish kind of flair to Razor's name. When Bob, and definitely the crowd's way more into Razor, though, when like Backlund comes out, like even Fink should be like, you know, former champion, 6-year champ. Like they do nothing. They look like, here's Bob Backlund, and he just sounds like a loser. So like no one cares about him. So the crowd definitely way more over. I put silence and booze when Backlund comes out. It's a weird combo.
They never acknowledge Backlund as a former champion.
Right. They like, Ross does say it, but like Fink should be saying that. They should say, like, you know, show his highlight video, something, like make him a big deal, but they don't. Like, it's so like nonchalant. Like, for, and I didn't realize this. Like, it probably took me to like 2000 before I knew like Backlund had a 6-year reign. And I still don't believe it. Like, I feel like, I must have misread that. Like, it doesn't
Think about like the Ruthless Aggression era, like right when that was kicking off and McMahon was like announcing, you know, Bischoff and all that stuff. He gives that promo where he says like the Billy Graham era, Bruno era. He doesn't mention Backlund, and Backlund was the longest era of all
of all champions. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like they're ashamed of it or something. Yeah. Or, I don't know, but I mean, I would be too, but. There's definitely an edict there to not speak about Backlund's title reign or something.
Yeah, and I the only other thing I had was Macho and Bobby have some weird chemistry in this. So Macho, one of his questions, I had to write this down. Macho goes, "I don't know what my first question at Doink would be," and Bobby says, "What?" And then Macho just responds back, "Well, I'm not going to tell you." It's like their chemistry sometimes on the show for some of the stuff is just like so awkward,
right?
And it definitely, like, I don't know if they just didn't get along, but yeah, I had to write that down because there's multiple times where Macho and Bobby are just not on the same wavelength. And then I sent this to JT's mailbag, but is this the most pointless match in Mania history? Because
probably
there's no buildup and you don't put someone over strong. I think of like a good match that you put someone over strong is like Hercules versus Earthquake at 6, right? Yeah. There's no buildup, but at least you put Hercules over strong, right? Like with the stretcher job, and like here you could have done that, right? Razor could have done the Razor's Edge. Instead, he wins on like a cheap roll up. Like there's no point of it, and there's no feud or anything. So it's definitely up there. I was thinking some other ones, but this is definitely one of the most unnecessary Mania matches ever.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
All right, so we get going then to the first half of our double main event. We first get a promo by IRS. I know Aaron hates IRS, but man, I am loving him right now on this little run. His promo about how he wants to beat Hogan's face in is amazing. He's just such a dick. The way he says it, he's just like, he doesn't scream. You know, all the rest of us are right, screaming promos and I'm going to get you. Like, he's just so like, in his suit and tie, just like, yeah, Hogan, I'm going to pound your face in.
He sounds like an 80s movie bully. Like, like the way he talks. I'm into IRS now. Like, not in ring as much, but like the promos he's cutting. And like the character itself, I'm into it.
Yeah. So they have a nice promo. They mention how, money talks and they took care of Hogan before the match. So it sets up Hogan. When Hogan comes out, he's got a big black eye. And so they've made that, whatever happened, they made it a good storyline that it came from Money Inc. So, you know, the commentators are able to, anytime the match has a dead point, really bring up this black eye and how Money Inc. took him out.
Right.
So IRS and Money Inc. first. So kind of weird in the middle of the middle of Mania, you got Hogan coming out, but it all makes sense by the time we get to the end. But Money Inc. come out first, and then Hogan and Brutus to a big pop. The crowd is definitely knows who Hulk Hogan is. Brutus maybe not so much, but they're all about this. So crowd is loving it. The match, it's long.
Yeah.
It's plotting. It's got some points where you can see what they were trying to do as far as like, okay, have 3 or 4 minutes and then give a big pop for Hogan and maybe to see, you know, as a crowd behind him, maybe like a little test to see, make sure the crowd really is all about him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just too long. I feel like to put over Money Inc. taking down Hogan, they needed a more cheating. There's a long like heat spot on Hogan, which really doesn't happen from like guys his size, right? Usually he gets the heat from Earthquake or King Kong Bunny.
Monsters.
Right, yeah. The monsters. Like, he never really gets that from, smaller guys that are his size. So I felt like if you wanted to do that, you needed more cheating for Money Inc. And that's where I kind of put in my notes. And maybe Jimmy Hart as their manager still would have helped here, right? That it was like 3-on-2 versus the other way where it's 3-on-2 on the face side. The ending, I'm still not sure what happened. I don't know if you can explain, but somehow Money Inc. win and Hogan and
So like there was a part where they were gonna walk out, and for some reason when the ref announced that if they get a count out, the belts will change hands.
Yep.
When literally your first match of the show, there was a count out and the champion kept his belt. Why the fuck does Hogan get this advantage, you know, for tag team titles? I don't get it. Like, I don't know.
And the great Bobby line where he's just like, are they just making, he's like screams, are they just making up the rules as they go along?
Yeah.
It's kind of mocking wrestling, right? Of like just this.
Right.
Like,
oh, something. Yeah. And even like, I didn't understand the finish either. Like it was a little foggy to me. And then Jimmy Hart attacks the ref. So it's like, you guys are such baby faces in here that, you know, you got your manager attacking the ref. You're changing the rules on the fly. You're doing these like Brutus is like gassed out of his mind doing his strut. You know, like he's trying to like show Hogan, hey, I can still do it. Don't worry. Like, I can still do my pose too. But do you know the story behind Hogan's black eye?
Well, I do not, but I heard multiple rumors and I'm never sure which one is true.
The alleged story and that I've heard multiple people say, I don't obviously don't know for sure, is that Savage punched him because Liz was staying at his house to get away from him.
Yeah.
So if that's true, when Hogan first comes out, the way Savage is like, just like orgasming over seeing that black eye, he's like, oh, look at how beat up that, like, he's like so proud of his work, if that's true.
Yeah.
The reason why I believe it's true is because Hogan's come out and said, yeah, everyone thinks Savage hit me because I had to lie to the trainer and say Savage punched me so that they would let me wrestle that night. And I'm like, no, the trainer asked you what happened. You said Savage punched you. Now you're trying to retroactively go back and say that. But, you know, like just like Andre was 10 feet tall and 600 pounds, according to Hogan or whatever. But yeah, so I'm assuming that really did happen. But, you know, that's why Savage was not wearing a toga. He had those little braces across his hands. He might be a little bruised up. You know? But it was just weird how, like, if that did happen, how straight Savage kept it too. Like you know, like he was like fawning over Hogan when he won and everything. So. It's unbelievable how they can keep it professional like that. This match though, like it's taking me out of the new generation feel. Like when I see a match like this, and later on is even a worse like contributor to that. But you know, like I don't mind, like even in Backlund too, he did it. Like I don't mind seeing them every now and then. It's just when they're such a big part of the show. Like it kind of just doesn't feel new generation fully yet. Yep. And the crowd's definitely into them. Like I was trying to like pause so I can see which members of the crowd I'm going to have to look up on Facebook and like ask them what the fuck their problem was for being so into Hogan in 93, but they're definitely over. So like, you can't fault like the company for, you know, having them there and being part of the show. But you know, like selfishly for me, it just doesn't fit the whole promotion right now, you know?
Yeah, and they make it like the match is confusing, and I think they were just doing it to check the pops on for Hogan, right? So like even Jimmy Hart counts up, when the ref's knocked out, Jimmy Hart counts a pin, and definitely some of the crowd think that's like legit. Like they start cheering like they won. Hogan and Brutus actually grab the tag belts and do a pose for it. So I think some of the match was, hey, we're gonna let Hogan do all his stuff. We're gonna see how the crowd reacts to, you know, him holding a title. You know, the chance he gets, like, we're going to really see if this is, you know, still a viable thing. Cause it kind of felt played out in 92. Let's see if he's still a big deal. So, you know, they definitely got some big pops and definitely the crowd was there for him, but, the match just goes on, and Brutus is bad. So, I think we said enough on that. So Money Inc. retained, I don't think we figured out how, but
Right.
Definitely don't.
They didn't get counted out. That's how they were saying.
Yeah, we didn't get counted out by leaving. They and so then the match ends. Hogan grabs a briefcase and they open it up and find some money and they throw some money into the crowd. To kind of celebrate. Hogan's music goes on and on forever, and then we get Todd Pettengill again in the crowd with another great interview with the owner of Caesars, who gives like a 20-minute pitch on why to come to Caesars Palace, of every event they've ever held there.
Right.
And he also gets Natalie Cole, so they're celebrity of celebrity mania. She's really shocked they gave away free money. So That's Todd's job, is to go to find people in the crowd to annoy.
Yeah, he was like very close to that dude when he was talking to him.
He
was
And he like cuts him off. He's like, "Can I get my room comped?" Because the guy just kept going out. He's like, "Can I get my room comped? We're done with you." So, obviously, we're not there to pump Caesar's Palace, but first half of the show, kind of first three matches, you feel pretty good. You get a squash match or whatever we call the backlit match, and then you kind of get this like weird mid main event that kind of comes up disappointing. It wasn't not a very good match to watch.
Right.
And so you're kind of like, this mania is not going great. And there's some cool parts, right? The double doink. I think a lot of the Steiners and Head Shrinker match is cool. And the Tonka Shawn match is pretty good, but it's, you know, there's nothing been so far memorable. And so we're halfway point. Should we stop here to kind of get our plugs in, and then we'll take the second half to see if we get a turnaround?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. So I was listening to No Holds Barred today, actually, you know, Aaron and JT, you know, great to have Aaron back. He was on a little hiatus with a couple of his shows, and, you know, they were rebooking like the King of the Rings, which was awesome. I love hearing shows like that. And I'm just going to say this as kindly as possible, because Aaron said he has no problem shitting on Brett. Fuck you, Aaron. like you can go fuck yourself for that. So I'm just gonna—I mean that in all kindness. But yeah, I'm glad Aaron's back. He did the year that was with 98 recently. His shows are like must listen to for me. Then you got TNA Never Dies, which should be coming back as well with Jenny on there with those two. We got the Extreme Three-Way Dance is about to come back too. I know I've been talking to JT about that, and I'm really excited because like 96 is like the jumping on point for me in ECW. So like, it's going to be a little nostalgic for me, to hear like their kind of view on it. And I think it's pretty new for them. So, that's going to be pretty interesting to listen to. And then you got like the War Zone as well. That's, in 96 as well. So it's like all this like perfect nostalgia for me right now. Talked about the Ruthless Aggression era earlier, like Vince's promo. You got Jake covering that, which Ruthless Aggression era is probably like, if I had to like pin down, it's probably my favorite era of all time. Like if I just had to say, you know, you can only watch these matches from a certain time, like the quality was so good, and the kind of stories were kind of mixed in like a little Attitude Era ish you know, so that's a very good era to follow along with.
Yeah, and then we also got from the Squared Circle of the Silver Screen, they just dropped Man on the Moon with Jim Carrey. So that's the Andy Kaufman story with Jerry Lawler. So awesome pod there. Now at the Rumble, they dropped something today. Well, recording a couple days back, but I listened to one with Perfect and Ronnie Garvin today. That was my listen to today. So lots of interesting. I love that show because you just get these random guys they talk about. You know, Butch or the Bushwhackers, or you know, Ronnie Garvin. Like 10 minutes on Ronnie Garvin's Royal Rumble is just kind of fun to hear. And like sometimes you don't think about the guys. Like, you know, they talk about like Perfect in 93, like how he should have maybe won or been used differently. And like, you don't really think about that because he's so over for that, that Rumble. And I just love it because it's just, you know, it's not same old. They're kind of digging into each guy and giving a fair shot to each guy. Like I said, they still have Danny Davis in their top 10, which like sounds silly and sounds so ridiculous. Right. But like, we actually talk about like a guy, you know, giving an effort in a match. It makes sense. So
it makes a good point.
Yeah, and then they also mentioned, because I just listened to it too, the year that was, the 1998. Man, he's like running out of years, so it's been a great journey. I'm going to have to definitely re-listen to some of them early on and feel like, all right, do some of them feel out of place? Because like, sometimes it feels like, man, I feel like 2000 should be there, or I don't think he's done 91, right? Or he just did 91, right?
Yeah, he did 91, I think.
Yeah, right. So it's like, oh, I felt like that one would be lower. So there's always like, you know, interesting as you kind of listen to it. And then some of the newer pay-per-view, some of the newer years, I'm like, I don't remember those. I got to put those on my watch list. So I love that. I love that that show. So great to see Aaron back.
He killed it for 98. Like that 98 might have been his best one yet. Like I feel like, you know, his little hiatus definitely recharged him. And you know, the show went a little longer, so you can tell he was like, in the zone with that one. And it's just 98. Yeah. Like 98 is so weird because like 97 is my favorite year. 96 I love because it built 97. And 98 is like their peak. It's not like my favorite year, but like when he describes all the stuff like that happens in 98, it's like, damn, it was such a good like show. Like not even like matches or anything like that. Just the show itself was so perfect in 98. And I think he represented that really well.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because he like crapped on Undertaker Kane match. I forget if it was Unforgiven or whatever pay per view. And I've never seen that. So he starts talking about this match, like worst match. I'm like, I have no idea what he's talking about. And it was so in tune to 98. I'm like, how do I not know what this match is? So I'm like, I want to like see what he's talking about. How so much hatred.
Yeah, I was the same way.
I was just like, I thought I liked
everything Undertaker and Kane did in 98.
Right. So, I didn't think there was a bad thing in 98. It's not like 99 where I knew there was crap. Like 98, I feel like it was like, oh, everything was just a home run. So I'm definitely, it gives some of those memories. So about that. And then sometimes you just hear guys and, you know, in there about like, oh yeah, they were there for that time. Or, man, you know, Mark Merrill and someone like people like that you just kind of forget about were around still. So.
Right.
All right, so we get to the second half of the pay-per-view of WrestleMania 9. They start with Luger and Perfect, and they do bring up that Luger knocked out Bret Hart at the birthday or the brunch, the WrestleMania brunch. So they're kind of bringing in Luger and Bret as a new feud. Which is unique right before they're about to build up a blow-off between Perfect and Luger. So is it your turn or mine on this one?
Yeah, I think it's mine on this one.
All right.
So this Lex entrance felt like he got the big boy entrance. Like he got the girls coming out. This felt like one of the first times they've done that at WrestleMania.
Yep,
like
definitely.
Done the special, you know, all the dressing on it kind of entrance. And it's like, damn, like I love this character. Like I love everything about the narcissist, like the way it's moving so far. And you know, when the girls come out, Savage is like fully erect because he just can't get himself.
Of course. Oh, yep.
Like, God, he's such a, like Chris Hansen needs to go back and and talk to him and have a seat. He's just so horned up. But
yeah,
Perfect comes out. We get a little stalling early, which I actually liked for this match. Like usually it's like a Memphis thing where they kind of stall around and then build up to it. I thought, you know, no other matches on the show really did that. So I thought that was like a nice little touch that they did. And I thought the pacing was good because the crowd, like, and I'll attribute most of this to Perfect because he's such a good worker that like they got the crowd to really buy in. I think this was like the first match where like, yeah, the Hogan match got some pops because he was like pandering. But as far as like the match itself, I thought this was the first match to get like some really good heat from the crowd. And I think like the way they built the finish was really smart too. You know, like having Luger win like that with the feet on the ropes, like Perfect's feet on the ropes, it protects both guys, but it keeps Luger strong too, like as a heel, like as a dick heel, you know. And the way he knocks him out with a forearm at the end was awesome. Like I just felt like you come away from this, like you kind of sacrificed Perfect, but you didn't kill him dead. So, like, you're making Luger this, like, primetime character where I don't think they treat this version of him the way that it feels like it's being built up. Like, I don't think they eventually do what they could have. But this match was just awesome. Like, I felt like they you know, the build has been good between the two because they're both kind of like the show-off characters of the heels and the baby faces. And just the way it all came together, I thought, like, I'll spoil it now. I think this was the match of the night in my book, and I know it's like going to be like a hot take, but I just love how the crowd was into this, and both guys worked like a good pace for each other and kept the crowd into it the whole time.
Yeah, you definitely have a different opinion on the match than me. it's not bad, but like it's okay. There's an awesome chop by Perfect on Luger that the whole crowd like wakes up for. It's kind of a weird match to have post Hogan. You know, they should kind of have like a wrestling match, you know, post like the big halftime, right? So normally this would be get a beer, like throw out, you know, Bob Backlund versus Razor Ramon would be maybe more appropriate here, but so the crowd, you know, probably isn't all for this match. You know, they're kind of, you know, they're a little bit energized. I do think they definitely went over the crowd. It's just, it's nothing great. I think again, another screwy finish where Perfect's leg is on the rope, but the ref misses it. And this is the one where the ref doesn't come out to tell him. So every other match, there's been a crazy finish. The other ref comes out. And then I do like after the match, right, where they have Luger then knocks out Perfect. But it's like, why not just do that during the match? Like, you're trying to put Luger over. Like, just have him win that way. Perfect could deal with a loss like that. Like,
that's true.
It's like, it's a loaded forearm. Like, it's not like he's hitting him with something else. Like, it's a cheap move. You could keep building up Perfect and keep building up Luger, and that elbow is something, you know, that's you know, no one should mess with it. So,
right.
I feel like it just was okay. Like, you know, like 2.5 star match, like not bad, but it's not like anything to write home for. And then just, again, I just like kind of silly finish where, like, again, if you're in the crowd, like, this happens a lot, but like, they don't have the big video monitors. They don't tell you what you're seeing. So, like, I don't know how the crowd figures out like what's happening in these matches. That'll definitely happen in the next match. But like, it's just a lot of this night is like, okay, how could anyone figure out what just happened during the match?
Right. I don't know. I think the atmosphere like started to kick in with the crowd, and it really like, because I was kind of hitting a lull with like the Hogan stuff and,
yeah,
you know, Razor, that match was so pointless. I was just hitting the lull. And I think this match like woke me up too. And I think that's why I'm like, you know, I think if I watch this as a standalone, no, it's not going to be that great. But
right, yeah,
I think it caught me at a good time. And I think that's why I like it so much. And I don't even think it's like this great match. Like, I wouldn't even put it at like 3 stars. I don't think I'd put anything on the show at 3 stars or maybe right at 3 stars. But I just felt like it performed what it needed to, and it did it right, and it wasn't too like disjointed or anything.
All right, I get my turn, right?
Yeah, you got your 5. Okay,
just double checking. Well, you said nothing 3 stars because this one's 5. So
right.
So we get Taker versus Giant Gonzalez. So another cool entrance here by Taker. So he comes out in like a little like sedan with a vulture. So it's a pretty cool entrance. The crowd definitely is in awe of Giant Gonzalez. So I think like the lead up to the match until the bell is pretty awesome. You kind of mentioned like not how big entrances, but this is, you know, two in a row now where they've had big entrances. You know, it's such a staple now of Mania, but I like it. It's making it feel like these guys are big stars, which it should be. Like, wrestling is about that. Like, it's about the stars. Like, it's not about the really, especially WWE, right? It's not about the in-ring stuff. Like, it's about these bigger than personalities. So I like they're both, and even Jen Gonzalez, just the way they have the smallest ref they could find is in there. They got Harvey Whippleman with them. So they're making him seem like this giant that Taker can't do it. They do the cool lockup spot where they walk to each other, and definitely Gonzalez has got a, you know, almost foot on him. So that's an awesome visual. Though Gonzalez has lost his furry trunks, so now instead of having the actual fur, it's like painted on his. So I think that
right.
I don't know if they're trying to say budget cut or why he had to go lose the fur, but I feel like, you know, we were talking last time about how it doesn't look silly. I think now it's starting to look silly. Like, I think the fur kind of added to it. Like, it looks cheaper. Like, it just looks cheaper. The match is pretty dreadful. Gonzalez has a couple good moves because he's just so big. Like, when he strikes down with his forearm against Taker, like, that looks awesome. When he kind of tosses him against the ring steps, and even though it's the classic JR saying they're solid steel, and it flips over and it's empty, you know, that looks like a cool visual.
But right.
Gonzalez is just like so immobile, and his selling is so bad. It's just like over the top monster villain type, like flailing his arms, like the stuff Taker's hitting him with because he can't really get him in the face is like kind of in the chest, but like Gonzalez kind of serves it like he knocked him out. It's a bad match. I wanted to give it more, you know, more love because we've kind of liked the buildup.
Yeah.
But Gonzalez just like, I feel like the crowd's like almost laughing at him at times because he's just not coordinated enough. And they just make it too long. Like, I don't know, if you could have done this in 2 minutes, maybe, and done 2 or 3 moves. Don't, like, anytime Gonzalez drags out there and like is either selling or trying to sell that he's a monster, it just doesn't look believable.
Well, that's the thing. He looks goofy when he tries to sell it. Like, he like he overdoes it instead of just being like a naturally physical and physically imposing person. He like overdoes and tries to be like a real monster or something.
Right.
Yeah. And it comes off goofy. And I think the crowd does like snicker and not take it serious, like you're saying. So that'll make you not buy a character 100%. And then you really just don't give two shits about what he does in the ring. So, you know, I think you're right on that.
Yeah. And then this is another one where, you know, Taker's, you know, the one thing I'll give on Taker, you know, he's always kind of mocked the match, but he does sell for Gonzalez, and it's definitely they put Gonzalez over. So why it kind of looks silly. Most of the match is Gonzalez on top. Taker finally makes a comeback, and Gonzalez immediately grabs a sheet of paper, like a rag, and chokes out Undertaker. The announcers over the top say they can smell chloroform, but no one else in the crowd seems to be noticing it. and so Taker's kind of knocked out. The ref calls for a DQ, so Taker's streak is intact. And they actually have to structure out Taker. So pretty cool visual. The crowd definitely then starts chanting for Hogan to come out to take out Gonzalez. So the crowd's still into Hogan. But then the gong hits and Taker comes out. Gonzalez, man, he oversells it like he can't believe it. And then even their post-match where Taker finally knocks him down, which is, you know, the crowd loves it. Like, the crowd pops huge for Taker. Like, Gonzalez, like, he doesn't know how to back away. Like, they finally, you know, maybe it's just mistiming it, but, like, he's right next to Taker where he could still fight him, and yet he's, like, scared of him. Like, it's just, Gonzalez doesn't get it. I don't know what it is. Like, I know he's new to wrestling, so, you know, I feel bad picking on him, but, like, he's just bad at coordinating, like, his moves and taking it seriously. He's probably having the time of his life, but, like, he's just, right. it's just, the character's not meant for that.
Well, and it's like, you know, the crowd chanting for Hogan would have been so perfect for him to come out here and do the save. Like, I wish they would have done that instead of what they do. Because, you know, Hogan slaying the Giant is the trademark thing. Like, that's right. The Hogan, you know, which I guess you could argue that too for later. But still, like, you know, Giant Gonzalez is not coordinated. He doesn't need to take a body slam or a big boot and a leg drop. Like, you know, you're not really trying to protect Giant Gonzalez. Does he even do that much after this? Like, I don't remember him being a big part of the picture.
Yeah, I mean, they have to have a rematch. So, I think we'll get to it, right? Well, yeah, because that's at SummerSlam, so they actually bring in Mr. Hughes, right? That becomes the feud with Taker, because I think they just realized Gonzalez can't go. So I don't know if they took him to the power plant to, like, you know, get him some more training to think let's give it another go with it. But
like, think about how, like, if you're a Hogan fan in this era and you love seeing the Hogan formula, right? Like, wouldn't you would lose your shit if he came out, attacked Giant Gonzalez, took down the big monster, set up a match at King of the Ring for Hogan and Giant Gonzalez, and then, you know, either you put Gonzalez over strong by getting rid of Hogan because he's leaving anyways, or you let Hogan conquer the Giant that's not going to be around anymore anyways. Like, if you're a Hogan fan and that's what you're watching, that's the formula, you know. Like, that I wish they would have went with that.
Yeah, it's weird. The crowd, like, again, I get why they're kind of chanting for him, but it's definitely kind of weird point by you. Like, all right, would have been better suited here to come out and kind of take on Gonzalez. I just think they tried putting Gonzalez with Taker, so it was, like, believable when Taker hits him with, like, one little weak clothesline that would send him over. But yeah, it was a rough match. I tried giving it a go, but Gonzalez is just comical. comically bad, and I feel bad, you know, picking on him and stuff, because I think, you know, he wasn't a wrestler, you know, probably didn't get the right training. They probably didn't teach him much, and I think, you know, just being 8 feet tall, it's the same thing with Giant, Andre the Giant, right? Like, I don't think he can do a lot, right? So, like, I think, like, what you see is, like, the best he can do. He's a spectacle, right? And sometimes they probably didn't do him any favors by making this match more than 2 minutes and just a quick spectacle by actually, like, trying to have him wrestle. Like, I think that's his biggest problem. Let him go out there, knock Taker down, like, 3 or 4 times. You know, maybe do something maybe a little different than the chloroform. Maybe, like, grab a chair so the crowd can actually see it and it's not as so silly. And then you could do the same spot where Taker comes back. Okay, Giant Gonzalez is like, I don't know how to take this guy out. But the way it kind of goes off, it just kind of feels silly. And again, you get another like crappy finish, non-pinfall, like confusing who actually won. But the moment when Taker comes back out, I think is awesome. Like the crowd loves it. And like Taker's like zombie like look where his like hair is messed up and he's like just kind of staggering to the rear. Paul Bearer's holding him back. Like that's an awesome moment. And even both, I think both their entrances were well done too. So.
Right. All right. So now we're on to our main event of the evening. Before that, we get a little recap with Duggan, you know, with what Yoko's done to him. Kind of, you know, setting the table. And then for some reason in this, like why they had to do this, it just put me in a shit mood for this match. They had to like cut to Hogan for some reason. And he has to like, he's basically like looking down on Brett. Like, yeah, you guys trust me. He's a good wrestler. Like,
yeah.
You know, like I have to give him my co-sign for him to be for him to main event WrestleMania. Like, you know, he's working. I've talked to Brett and blah, blah, blah. Like, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit if Hogan, you know, talk to Brett? So like, already, like, especially when I know the bullshit's coming, like adding this onto it, I'm just like, man, there's no way he didn't go backstage, tell Vince, hey, you know, you got to give me the belt and politic his way into this shit, because, you know, it's so unnatural how he shoehorned his way into this. But anyways, we get the, you know, Yoko and Brett, our main event. Yoko's here because we won the Rumble and the Royal Rumble. It's our first time we get the winner to go main event WrestleMania against the champion. So it's a big deal there. This is a pretty solid match at first. Like, you know, the way it's the way that Brett and Yoko is going back and forth. Like, I've seen quite a few like Brett and Yoko like house show matches, and there's even an awesome cage match during the summer between these two. That
between
is, like,
Brett and Yoko?
Oh my god. Yeah, that's I'll have to send it to you. I have it. It is so good. Like, it's a house show match, so I don't think there's any commentary, but like the match is one of the best cage matches I've ever seen. Like, it's worked so good, and it's like their chemistry, like after all this like mess of what goes on after this, they like build very good chemistry with each other. So I'll definitely have to send that to you. We might cover like some of these house show matches in the summer that come about, because there's a couple of them that are pretty good, along with the Memphis stuff that happens in the summer. Maybe there'll be like a little special episode or whatever, like the hidden gems kind of thing or something.
This
match, it's solid. It's, you know, I think they're feeling each other out. Yoko's not like, I don't, as much as he's been awesome in the squashes and everything like that, I don't know if he was like necessarily ready for this main event. He's kind of gassed in the match. Brett does hit like an awesome top or middle rope bulldog on Yoko as he's kind of bent over to get him down finally. So it shows like he's smart enough to figure out a way to get him down, because he knows he's not going to be able to like slam him or knock him down or anything. And then we get Brett, like he puts him in the sharpshooter finally, and Fuji like telegraphs that he's going to throw this powder in his face. He, like, it takes him forever to finally do it. Like it feels like the camera was zoomed in on him, and then he finally does. Well, you know, Yoko gets the pin, wins the belt, and you know, like I listened to I don't know if it was Entering the Rumble, I think it was, or the rebook from the King of the Ring, where Aaron brought up like such a good point that Yoko is the problem with this 93. And as much as I love Yoko, they pushed him too fast almost to the title. Like, they could have pushed him to like a feud, like a solid, like how worse would it have been if he fought Duggan here as a blow off match, you know, and kind of put him over huge in this like, you know, high level program. But, you know, making him the champion didn't fit yet. Like, Brett's reign wasn't ready to be over.
Right.
You had Razor primed up that could have been a champion. You know, you had other guys, Lex, who was getting built up big. Those three guys should have been your main event scene, and then kind of let Yoko be the monster in the Undertaker realm kind of thing. And Aaron was making that point. I agree 100%. But, you know, the finish, we all know what happens. You know, Brett loses the title, and for some reason, Hulk Hogan comes out. And
it's Brett's friend.
Brett's best friend, right, yeah. And he's looking at Brett, and it's like, okay, yeah, he threw the salt in the eyes, but he won the belt, whatever. Why are you saying, like, why are they making Brett tell Hogan, yeah, go in there and win my belt. Like, for you though, not me, but do it for you. Like, it's so stupid. And he goes in there and, you know, Fuji puts the belt on the line, which is also so stupid. Like, why would he do that? You're a heel. Like, why are you giving out title matches, like impromptu right. title matches? You're the heel. The heel move is to, okay, yeah, we'll give you a title match, and then say, like, not tonight, and we'll walk away, whatever.
Right.
You know, but they give him the title match, and Hogan wins, and it's, I'll say this, the crowd went crazy when he won. Like, the crowd was so into Hogan winning the belt, and that's what pisses me off, because I know they felt like this was the right thing to do. But this is legitimately, and I'm not even, like, trying to be, like, hyperbolic, I think this is the worst finish in wrestling history. Like, I can't think of anything else that, like, kills the mood of a show, of an era, of a run more than this right here. Like, as much as, like, politics can influence wrestling and stuff like that behind the scenes, like, this has always been something. Like, I've always held a grudge against Hogan because of this. Like, that's how, like, personal it got, because I'm such a big Brett guy. And, like, this was kind of when I was starting to kind of get more familiar with wrestling, like, on a full-time basis. Not quite yet, but, you know, I'd go back and watch the tapes. I'm like, man, fuck this dude. Like, what is this? And he's skinny as shit now. It's like, no one believes you're the Hulkster anymore. You're not all roided out of your mind and everything. It's just, I don't know, man. I'll be done bitching about it. But for a show I really like, it's not like a bottom mania. The finish is definitely the worst in any WrestleMania history to me. So I'll let you throw a little comment on here on this match now.
Yeah. So the Brett Yokel match, I think, is pretty decent. I think we're right, or you're right in saying maybe Yoko's not ready yet. They've done a decent job building him up, but, like, man, Brett Savage, and I know they weren't big on face, but the Brett Yoko just has no feud, right? The crowd keeps chanting USA during the match, right? So you're building up this anti-USA guy with a guy from Canada, and Brett doesn't care about America, right? Like, it's not like he, like, kind of fakes it and panders. Like, he doesn't do it at all. Like, he never does anything American. So you kind of got a weird feud. I think Brett and Yoko have good chemistry. You know, on the Fuji thing, I think I know I listened to this in another podcast, but per Brett's book, that Yoko actually got gas from the sun, and they did that the ending early, and Fuji didn't know about it. So that's why it's so messed up. So it kind of makes sense when you kind of know that, like, why Fuji is, like, literally they're just staring at him, like,
do your thing.
So, you know, all right match. You know, when Yoko wins, like, one, Hogan's in there within, like, a second, so you don't even get, like, a visual of Yoko kind of, like, being the monster, right? So, like, I think they should have let that build up more time. Maybe they're worried about the crowd running, like, leaving. You know, I don't know if you end Mania that way, too, with a heel winning, so I don't even think that makes sense yet. I don't think the crowds really were ready for that. And so it makes sense then Hogan comes out. The crowd's definitely all for it, and the dumbest manager, Mr. Fuji, and challenging Yoko, or putting up Yoko's belt against Hogan, and you know, of course, does the salt move, which of course backfires as always. And 30 seconds later, you know, Hogan's the new champion. The crowd loves it, and then the fireworks and Hogan's song plays again for, like, the fifth time of the Mania. So I get your hatred. So there's two things I'll say. One was I remember at this time I was so pumped when Hogan won. Like, it was like, oh man, this is so awesome. Like, what a crazy Mania. Like, anything could happen at Mania. So I do kind of like that from that standpoint. Like, hey, you know, last year Warrior came back. Like, I remember that being a big moment for me. Like, oh man, Mania is like anything happens. And here, kind of like Hogan. And so I like that fact. I also know on Conrad's podcast, you know, Bruce Pritchard said one of the things they wanted out of this was they were going out to Europe and they wanted Hogan with the title in Europe. And they also, this is the first time they do the replay for wrestling. So, okay, I get that. Like, you have the surprise. Like, I don't think if you have that, if you just have Yoko winning the title, like, there's not much to this Mania that you can be like, hey, order this Mania, because you're going to see a bunch of crappy finishes. So I kind of get from a marketing standpoint, but when you actually, like, hear about the backstories and that this was planned like last minute and all that type of crap. And you think about how they've been building up Brett and you kind of screw him over. And of course, then what happens with Hogan over the summer, never giving Brett his win, like all that pisses you off. So
right.
I get your hatred of it, but like, I got to get at the time, like why they kind of thought, okay, maybe this is the way to go. And it's, I don't hate it as much as you do.
Right. Right.
I don't have the hates. Maybe because I think of it more of those other ways, because I've heard other people try to explain it away. But like let's build the company, let's build the new generation era. Like this hurts it big time, and it takes a while for them to kind of rebuild Brett and definitely rebuild Yoko. You know, is this credible monster that you know no one could really beat. I get that negativity.
Well, I think, you know, you're more attached to Hogan than I am too. So I get that, like how that makes more of an impact on you. Like, but the whole, and I've heard Pritchard say that stuff too, but like what I don't agree with is like Brett's like so over in Europe. Like that's where over in Europe than he is in the US. So it's like, I don't buy that bullshit excuse. And then like, you know, Hogan's like a flash in the pan at this point. Like, what are you really doing? Like, are you you're showing Brett that you're not really bought into him, or were you giving him a title run so he wouldn't go to WCW like he was going to in 92? Yeah. Are you like, you know what I mean? And that's why I think 10 is such a big WrestleMania for me, because it feels like his first title run, even though it's not. Like, it feels like right. Okay, we're doing it the right way this time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even his title, like, you know, the rumors of when Brett won it, you know, Vince did it on like a house show, so no one would talk him out of changing his mind, because it wasn't really planned that Brett was going to be champion, right? Like,
right. That's what right.
The whole plan was, but like, it was definitely not like going to come off Flair. Like, I don't think they moved it real quick from the Macho to Flair to like set that up. I don't know what their real plans were, but like, they obviously kind of quickly got Brett the title, you know, because like he lost at SummerSlam, like, and all of a sudden he becomes champion kind of out of nowhere on a random house show. So I kind of like the 10 better. Like, that's the real cementing. I kind of like that story better. Like, even if that was his first title reign, but like this, this, the politics of it all is like what you hate, right? Is like, okay, the guy that really deserves it. Like, okay, now just do Hogan to sell a couple more things. And it's such a short-term mindset of let's go sell tickets for Europe. But they're probably just hurting so much that they were just desperate for any bit of money and any bit of like, you know, mainstream publicity. What happens, right, is it quickly dies out. Like, I don't know, it'll be interesting to watch the, you know, lead up to King of the Ring, but like, I don't know if we'll see Hogan at all on that. I pretty much think he goes to Europe and then just stays there until King of the Ring. So right. they clearly like realize, crap, this maybe didn't work. You're like, we got a couple extra pay-per-view buys and maybe some tickets sold, but
right,
you know, we probably should have not played with that fire anymore.
Well, it's like this move just like screams like Triple H. Like, this is something he would do, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's I don't know if there's going to be a quadruple H. Like, we went from Double H to Triple H. Like, if there's ever a wrestler with four H's in his name, like, watch the fuck out, because he's going to pull some shit like that. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's just it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth, because it's like it's Brett too, and Brett's my guy. So I'm not going to act like I'm not biased towards that, because I am. But, you know, it's. And he recovers, like, he puts on great matches. It's like he doesn't, you can see though, it's like one of the little bricks that's going to be laid until 97 as to what is going to finally boil over. Like, this is the first, you know, piece of the puzzle that he can have his gripe with, and justifiably so. But you know, I was thinking of, like, as we're going over this WrestleMania as a whole, is there wasn't a good finish on the whole show. Like, even like the Steiners and the Head Shrinkers was the only relatively clean finish, but that was like a botched move too.
Yeah.
And then you had like the Razor stupid like package, like a roll up.
Small package, did.
Yeah, and Gonzalez, finish, Gonzalez, Tatanka, the IRS, and Hogan. That match, this match. I don't.
Yeah, because even Brett losing, I do like we didn't even bring that up, but I do like that Brett lost on the salt too.
Right.
Why makes Yoko seem a little small? Like, he still hit the leg drop. So like, even Brett, like, okay, there's a reason he lost. Like, you got an excuse for him. So but it is like all these finishes are just so confusing and they're not clean, and they don't put anyone over strong, right? Like Razor could have been the one, right? Where just like, you know, Razor's Edge Backlund, like no one cares. Like that's where the one where you got put over the guy without cheating, without yep. doing it, and they ruin it.
But like who came, you know, as much as I've said, I've defended the show, like I'm not going to put it high up there. It's still bottom five or six or whatever, but like who came out of this show strong? I can't think of anybody that really came. Yeah, okay.
I think Doink does because I think that fits his character. Like even though it's a crap, that's what I actually had in my notes. I was like, this is a cool finish if you didn't have 10 other ridiculous finishes.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, like it's like that's the character, right? Like he's got these yep. gifts and he's doing all this different stuff, and like he's not your normal wrestler. So like I think
that's
that one.
Call.
You know, it is one where it comes over strong. And that's probably it. Luger a little bit, because even though he kind of won cheaply, I think the forearm afterwards puts that move over as like a killer move. So I put the two of them. That's about it. And maybe Luna, because she beat the crap out of Sherry. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's kind of silly, but like she did kind of beat the crap out of Sherry.
Right.
I don't know. Did you hear anything about them? I know everyone really cares about this, but the Kamala Bam Bam, do they make it? Did you hear any mention?
No, I didn't hear any reference to it at all.
It's just weird. It didn't bring that up at all. So I was wondering if I would hear it this time. I kind of watched this a couple of times and never heard the word. So, you know, interesting on some of these matches where the early matches were so long. And then even though they cut like this match down, because, you know, kind of a little bit early, and the Razor match was like nothing, they still couldn't find time for that, or Papa Shango and Tito. So kind of a weird, you know, mania as far as like the pacing and the like you mentioned, the finishes just are over the top, like confusing. And I think that's part of wrestling. Like not everything has to be 1-2-3 pinfalls, but like you do have to have some of that. And some of these are like, how could the crowd figure? I mean, I think two of the matches, we don't know how it actually ended, right? Tatanka and Sean, I'm not sure how it ended. And the Money Inc. match, I'm not really sure how it really ended. So that makes it confusing as well.
Yeah, that's not a good way to have a memory of your show, you know?
Yeah. So what do you think of the mania? Like before going into it, I was pumped about it. Did it move on your scale? Did it kind of stay the same? What kind of change? Besides you loving Hogan more?
Yeah. and I live in Florida, so I'm seriously thinking about seeking him out. But this so like as a show, like not necessarily just match quality, as aesthetics and everything, I thought it was bumped up because I watched it, you know, way back in the day. I wasn't like thrilled about it. I just watched it as like I watched everything. I wanted to see everything wrestling, so it didn't like hit me one way or the other. Then like through osmosis, kind of like with everybody shitting on it over the year, I'm like, okay, maybe it's the one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. It's definitely not the worst, because of, you know, if you're gonna pull it within like the bottom five or six, I think it's the best of those by default, just because of the atmosphere and the theme and kind of how you know we're trying to establish a new generation era, even though Hogan kind of shit on that. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid show. It's not the best. It's not great, and the finish is like all time bad. But you know, it was still at least a fun watch. Like I'll give it that. Like I'm not gonna say it was like this great show, but it was still kind of fun to watch up until the end.
And quick.
Right, and quick.
Like it's definitely only like 2 hours, 2 hour 30 minutes. Like it's not overly long, and the matches that are, well, besides the Money Inc. Match that just goes on too long, but like the Shawn match is long, but it's enjoyable, and even the Head Shrinker match is a little long, but it's enjoyable. The only one that's really kind of bland is that middle match, where I just think it just goes on too long, and it's just, you just don't want to care about it, especially when you know what happens. It's like, I really don't care about this. Like it's just, hey, every 5 minutes we're getting a big cheer spot for Hogan. So I was pumped going into it. I tried the match. I think I didn't change the most on was the one that I was hoping I would change, was Gonzalez Taker. Like I felt like they built up Gonzalez really well. And I thought like, man, maybe this is the match where like Gonzalez isn't as bad as we all, you know, mock him for and make fun of him. And he kind of is.
He is.
Yeah. So that was kind of disappointing. But you know, one match that I probably never appreciated as much is the Head Shrinkers versus Steiners. Like I'm not the biggest Steiners guy. Like I never was a WCW guy before. Well, you're going to hate this, before Hogan really went there. But I was like WCW like 92 on. So like, right. That's not really, that's, you know, the Steiners really weren't there. So, you know, I'm not the, you know, I just never grew up with them. So, but that match was a ton of fun for me. You know, kind of in this rewatch and when I watched it, you know, a couple months before. So I like that. And I think I just more like Doink. Like, I just think it's so comically. And I liked, I also really like Bobby's commentary with it. Like, I just think he like over top selling and just like falling in love with it and making fun of Ross and Macho for like not seeing some of the stuff. I think I liked on it. You know, the Hogan stuff, you know, is silly and so politicky that like, it's, it didn't make me watch it better and be like, oh yeah, I believe in Hogan more. Like, it's just like, right. this is kind of silly.
Right.
And I think it's one where, you know, you kind of mentioned it, right. That you can maybe rebook the main event as far as don't use Yoko there. Like, don't have him beat Brett. Have it a Macho. Well,
Aaron mentioned that. He was like, you know, or JT, one of the two was like, you know, how much better would this have been if it was Brett versus Macho? And I think that is the answer. Like, I would have loved that.
All right. Any other things you want to comment on the Mania?
No, I don't want Homeland Security coming after me with my remarks about Hulk Hogan stuff. Yeah, I better shut up now.
Yeah, let's go to our awards then.
All righty.
All right, so we got most new gen outfits.
I'm going to go with Luna.
Luna? Okay,
She has a great look, even though I don't really think she fit with him. Like, she was definitely out there with her look.
Yep, I'm going to go Crush. His Hawaiian-ness in the sun, just the bright yellow, bright awesome. And bright orange. So he definitely brought it today. Most new gen performer.
I don't know. So this one's a little hard. I'm gonna have to go Sean. I think he worked like a good style of his match. You know, like they were pulling out stuff. He was bumping like crazy for Tatanka. No one really like killed it as far as performance goes in my eyes, but it's either him or Doink, and I think Doink was more like character based, so I'm gonna give it to Sean.
Sean, okay. I'm gonna give it to the Steiners. I just think their match was pretty fun. I think they were definitely over. I would debate Tatanka as well. Like, I know Sean kind of carried him more, but I think Tatanka was over, but I'll put the Steiners just because I've never really been the biggest fan of theirs. But I think that was a fun match that I'll rewatch again. Like, that's definitely like a match. I'll like, okay, that's a fun match to watch. Do I even have to ask worst match or segments?
No, it's the shit. There's a lot of, there's a couple of them. It's either Undertaker or, so I'm going to say the worst segment is Hogan co-signing Brett, because it pissed me off so bad that I wasn't even into the match, which was at least a solid match. So yeah, I'm gonna give it to that, or Todd Pettengill with the Japanese photographers, even though that was kind of actually made me laugh, so I can't really say it's the worst.
I was gonna put that as the best segment.
Yeah you know what, you're right.
I put Hogan winning. Hogan winning, come on. I think you have to.
I'm trying to erase that from my memory, so I don't even think it happened.
Yeah, I'm going to put Gonzalez, you know, selling. it was bad.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, the monster match selling. Right. Best match or segments?
Mine was, I spoiled it earlier, Luger versus Perfect.
It was perfect. I'm going to go with Tatanka, Sean. If just that victory, they should just put Tatanka over. Like, I think that would have been a great way to start the Mania, but it was still a fun match, and why it didn't really make sense with Luna and Sherry out there, it was still fun. It's an enjoyable match.
Exactly.
Stock up, do you got?
Oh, it was Doink, 100%. Luger might have been like my favorite performance overall, but the way Doink sold everything and his character just evolved. Like, Luger's character didn't necessarily evolve. It kind of stayed the same. Doink's character is, there's another layer to it now. So I'm going to go with Doink.
Yeah, I got to go with Doink too. I can't think of that many. Like, we kind of mentioned, like, who else had a bad perform or a good performance that came out stronger. There just wasn't many.
Right.
So I think we gotta go double doink as much as we hate to do that. But
right,
stock down.
I'm gonna go to Vince McMahon for owning a company that would let Hulk Hogan pull this bullshit.
Yeah, Vince McMahon giving it into Hogan's good. Yeah. I'm gonna go. I'm trying to think of. I mean, I want to say Backlund, but that's just too easy.
Right.
Fuji for making the terrible decision
to
launch. Yeah, I'm gonna put Yoko a little bit, just because it'll be. We'll see how they rebuild them, but I think I'll go
he
Fuji.
I'm gonna go Yoko
and Fuji because I don't mind the Vince It's such a thing of wrestling at this time that the heel rarely wins clean. So I think people are like, oh, he has to win clean. Like, most fans don't care about that stuff, right? Most of the entertaining fans don't really care. Like, oh, he didn't win clean. Like, when you make him look like a pussy or something like that, like, that's different. But, like, the salt in the eyes, like, okay, that's heels cheats. Like, that's part of their right. heels. But just him losing, like, accepting the challenge, like, barely holding on to the title, not having like a clear shot of him like walking around with the championship very clean. Like, I think it's going to hurt him, but let's see how quickly they can rebuild him. I think I kind of remember they do, but we'll kind of see because I think they had built him up well. So we'll see on it, but I'm going to have to choose him and Fuji together as a combo for just idiocy for even offering the challenge to Hogan.
Yeah, I like that.
What do they think was going to happen?
Exactly.
So I'll give them stop down. So, a good mania. I don't think it hurt. Like we kind of both mentioned, it didn't hurt our opinion of it.
No.
It's enjoyable watch. It's quick. It's not the worst. The setting's awesome. There's some good parts to it. The in ring is, hit or miss here and there, right? Like it's not all bad.
Right.
There's probably three matches that are pretty good in ring, right? Tatanka, Steiners and I would even go Luger, and I would actually say Brett Yoko I think is in ring. So yeah, they have good in ring. So if you're an in ring person, like it's not like all man, zero right. stars. Just way too many confusing finishes, and I think it's a cool ending with Hogan. I know you disagree. Coming up with the belt surprise ending. It kind of does put them in a back burner for a while that they have to kind of rebuild and recover from for a while.
Right.
I think we'll hurt them.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else you got on that?
No, I'm all good. I'm just excited to see where I think we can just fast forward until the day after King of the Ring 93.
No, I'm pumped about the King of the Ring because I think the qualifying matches. Yeah, I love the show, and I think the qualifying matches will be cool because it's kind of the first. I think they use some on Superstars. That's I think it's true. the first time they kind of have it, so it's just new, and I wonder if the guys are fresh and they kind of bring up that this is a big deal. So I'm kind of pumped right. that like this and the first new pay per view for them in 5 years. So I think it'll be kind of fun leading to the lead up to that, even though.
We're gonna get some debuts soon too. Yep. Like I've seen the little pictures like on Peacock, like you can see like when you're scrolling through, you can see the other guys. I'm like, oh, we're gonna get him soon. So, yeah, we got plenty to look forward to.
Yeah. So, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk in 2 weeks as we watch the big Raws after Mania to see what kind of happens. So.
Yes, sir.
All right. Cheers, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.